Russia has been preparing its economy for sanctions for years. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The list of countries imposing sanctions on Russia has multiplied. Japan, Australia, Canada, the UK have all announced sanctions. More are coming from the EU today. So far, these measures have targeted smaller Russian banks, Russian politicians, and the breakaway regions of Ukraine. They've also limited Russia's ability to issue sovereign debt internationally. But Russia has, in recent years, been steering its economy against such sanctions. For more on that, we have got Neil Shearing, chief economist at Capital Economics, joins us from London. Hi, Neil.
Good morning.
So Russia has, in a sense, been preparing itself for sanctions to limit their impact. How has it been doing that?
The most important way that it's been doing this is by running large current account surpluses. Basically, what's been happening is it's been running extremely tight fiscal policies and monetary policies. It's not been importing very much from the rest of the world, but it's been exporting a lot of oil and gas. That means it's built up large buffers of foreign currency reserves. And so if we now end up in a position whereby there are sanctions imposed on the economy, there's much less in the way of external debt. They have much more in the way of external assets, and that makes the economy much less vulnerable. Doesn't mean it's entirely immune, but it means that the economy is less vulnerable than was the case in 2014 during the Crimea crisis.
Well, right. Even then, you know, Russia didn't seem to care a whole lot about sanctions after it invaded Crimea. If sanctions this time around escalate, you know, for example, if countries start limiting Russia's ability to use the SWIFT system for transferring money internationally, do you think that would be effective?
There's a vast range of different sanctions that could be put in place here. At the moment, we're at the very mild end of the spectrum. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got potentially excluding Russia from mechanisms like the SWIFT payment system that would have a substantial macroeconomic impact. Now, in 2014, sanctions certainly didn't seem to act as a deterrent, but the Russian economy was hurt. This time round, given the measures that are being mooted, we think that the impact on the economy could be about 1%. But if we got more substantial measures, such as excluding Russia from SWIFT, then you could end up with a much greater economic impact, perhaps the hit to GDP being as much as 5 or 6%.
Are we likely to see any impacts to the global economy or economies outside of Russia from either sanctions or the conflict itself, do you think?
I don't think aggregate economic level they're going to have much of an impact on other countries. I do think, though, that the conflict could have an impact on other economies, but it depends on the path of the conflict, how quickly and dramatically that escalates. The big threat, in my view, is what happens to global commodity prices and energy prices in particular. It's not inconceivable that an escalation of the conflict could push global oil prices to the kind of $120 to $140 a barrel range. That would then put central banks, including the Fed and the ECB and the Bank of England, in something of a bind because they're already trying to fight high inflation.
Neil Shearing, Group Chief Economist with Capital Economics, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Yesterday, the S&P 500 entered correction territory, down 10% from its record peak in January, first time in 2 years that it has done that. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors, and I asked her why markets are so much less freaked out today.
Well, the mood in the markets has definitely improved since yesterday. Yesterday, there was a lot of concern on timing and impact based on what the response would be. The markets are, I think, taking a more optimistic attitude this morning because the initial response from the U.S. administration hasn't been as severe as the markets were expecting.
But couldn't that change, like, very quickly?
The markets are looking for language between the U.S. and Russia and how the global response is going to pan out. Right now, that initial language isn't nearly as severe as the markets expected. That's why attitude today has improved.
All right, Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Inflation. Remember inflation? Yeah, it's still here. Geopolitics aside, it is a notoriously slow problem to solve. Interest rate hikes can take sometimes a year to affect prices. The Biden administration is tackling the problem in a few ways, and part of that focuses on ports. It announced the first batch of grants for ports today, designed to unclog the nation's supply chain. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning, Sibri.
So this is almost $450 million we're talking about. How will that money exactly get to the ports?
Well, these are federal grants ports will have to apply for. And the administration says this is the biggest investment in the federal port infrastructure development program ever.
What kind of stuff can the money be used for?
The Department of Transportation says it's supposed to be used to, quote, improve the movement of goods to, through, and around ports. So the money could be used for things like expanding rail yards, port terminals, piers, or storage facilities.
And do we know how far this will actually go towards unclogging supply chains?
It's a start, Sibri, but it's not going to happen right away. First, ports have to apply for these grants. And of course, construction isn't going to happen overnight. So the administration isn't promising immediate relief. This is more of a long-term solution. The DOT is set to release its one-year supply chain report tomorrow, and that will assess the supply chain and how it can be fixed.
All right, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
In New York, I'm Sibri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.